measures towards fiscal consolidation, which have imposed on all departments the responsibility to tighten their belts. The Department of Home Affairs understands very well the constraints on government as a whole in terms of the division of revenue, and therefore the challenges that are faced not only by government as a whole, but the departments such as ours in particular, which, as you know, faces a challenge, amongst others, to expand its services to reach out to the areas which have historically been neglected, particularly your rural areas, to increase its human capital in order the better to provide a qualitative service to our people within an environment of constrained resources. The presentation by the DG will highlight that particular challenge and how we intend to deal with it. And so there are two issues which arise, which we as the department will have to deal with. One is to cut our cloth to meet our size in terms of resource allocation, to really how we've reprioritized within the department between different services in a manner that ensures that particularly the delivery of the service of the services is not hindered, but we have had to look at goods and services and other aspects of the department to reduce our budget for those areas in order to not affect the services that we deliver, the key programs. At the same time, we will continue to ensure that even within the resource constraints that we have, particularly at the level of human resources, we improve the quality of the service that we render so that our clients, both South Africans and non-South Africans, continue to feel the improvement in the quality of the services that the Department of Home Affairs has to deliver. The APP that we will present has tried to create a linkage between the five priorities the ministry outlined for the department and the medium-term strategic framework, so that those priorities find resonance and articulation within what the department has to perform. To recall, those priorities include the modernization strategy, completing the modernization strategy as it is, which would entail the live capture, the national identity system, and related programs, ensuring that we have, striving towards ensuring that we have uninterrupted network connectivity at all our offices at all times. Secondly, completing the implementation of the border management agent, its establishment. Thirdly, our frontline service, moving beyond just improving the look and feel, the aesthetic features of our office, towards ensuring effectively qualitative service delivery at our front offices by improving the capacity and the quality of our frontline officials, the quality of our management, deepening the level of the service to ensure that we leave our clients with an unforgettable experience. Fourthly, reviewing the immigration policy so that we finally put paid to the 1999 immigration white paper and replace it during the course of this year with a new white paper. We should, in the next few weeks, be ready with the green paper, have it published for discussion, and later, during the course of the year, we will have a new international migration white paper, which would have taken into consideration new dynamics in the process which could not be dealt with in the existing policy paradigm. And fifthly, the comprehensive, extensive overhaul of the physical and systems infrastructure of our 6 commission-led ports of entry to bring them on par with not only the international airport, but on par with requisite international standards for ports of entry of their business and intensity. So what this APP that we will present here today tries to do is to make strides towards fulfilling those 5 priorities. Honorable members will remember that, amongst others, during recent discussions on the movement of travelers during the festive season, one of the key questions that was asked was, how did we plan to roll out biometric capture at the land port of entry? We are developing through our operational plan a program to ensure that rollout, because we intend continuously to improve our management of immigration in particular, but international migration in general. And therefore, we will outline during the course of our presentation how the budget is allocated between the different programs. And the expectations that we have of all our managers with regard to what they need to do in pursuit of their programs. Quite clearly, the department has to be very strict with regard to the responsibility of managers towards financial administration, so that it's not viewed solely as the responsibility of the CFO and the DG, but we all play our part towards that regard. What I have just mentioned, Chair, was as a way of introduction, and I wish to therefore request the DG through you, Chair, to now take the committee through the presentation.
Thank you very much. You may proceed. I thought that we have already finished with the time, Minister and the Honourable Chair, the Honourable Members, Chair, we tabled the annual performance plan of the department on the 8th, required of the department. So I will be going through this presentation with that understanding, and as well as I won't repeat what the Minister has already indicated. But Chair, we start with what is our contribution as a department to MTSF. We wanted Chair to start with this slide to indicate that you start with the NDP, which is the government planning system informed by long-term strategic vision and plan. And then from there we move to the MTSF, which is a five-year expression centered on the 14 outcomes and associated targets and action plan from the NDP. And Minister talked about, you know, the five priorities of the Minister, which are informed by those documents I've already talked about. And then as a department now we developed a five-year strategic plan which must be aligned with that. And then every year we will combine our three-year plans to implement the strategic plan. Then it links with the MTSF of 2019, 2024, and 2029. So having said that, what are the areas which, as a department, we have to contribute toward the NDP? A major focus of the NDP is to confront the triple challenges of poverty, inequality, and unemployment by achieving higher growth rates. A priority for DHA, therefore, is to facilitate the acquisition of critical skills needed for economic growth and to build our own skills base. The NDP draws on international experience in pointing out the strategy will succeed if it is led by a capable state, staffed by professionals, where trust is endangered by social stability, improved services, and reduced corruption, and the mass of citizens will be part of the plan and economic development. The DHA could therefore play a key role in enabling regional development by working with the countries to establish efficient, secure, and managed immigration. The Prime Minister talked about the ports of entry and also the new paradigm shift on the immigration. The inclusion of all citizens in democratic development is enabled by providing them with the status and an identity that access to rights and services. The modernization program of DHA can reduce fraud and the cost of doing business by enabling e-government, and this will attract more investment. Based on that, we looked at, as we indicated, that now from there, from the NDP, then we look what has been the MTSF priorities based on electoral mandate. One is the decent work and sustainable livelihoods, education, health, rural development and food security and land reform, fight against crime and corruption. Then in terms of the 14 outcomes, the department is more contributing. On number three, all people in South Africa are in food safe, and the decent employment to inclusive economic growth and efficient, effective and development orientated public service. Then they included now the 14th one, which is the national building and social cohesion. But with the all people in South Africa are in food safe, what are the DHA commitments? As Minister has indicated, is the establishment of BMA by 2017, integrated border management strategy and sub-strategy developed and implemented to defend, protect, secure and ensure well-managed borders. 90% of all birds captured within 30 days by 2018-19. National Identity System, NIS, fully operational by 2018-19. 100% of all designated ports of aid equipped with biometric system, and then immigration and refugee acts are sent to end and signed by President based now on your green paper and white paper. Then decent employment and inclusive economic growth, the Home Affairs will establish DHL Premium Visa and Permit Service Centers for corporate account clients and their families. 85% of critical skills adjudicated within 4 weeks for application within RSA. And then with an efficient and effective development in public service, we want to establish now, which will be launched now at the beginning of the year, the establishment of a DHA contact center. What is different between a contact center and a call center is that the call center is a messenger type of a system, because the call center official is not having access to the systems. It depends on people calling and going back to the office, but the contact center will be running, the system will be running on top of our systems, then that call officer will be able to answer the client. Where is your application? Why is not processed? What do we need to still to submit? Chair, with the 14th one, we have not yet have a direct commitment. As I said, it was only introduced, so the department was still working with the Department of Arts and Culture on that regard. Well, Minister has touched on the what is the linkage of the minister's priority. So as a department, we know that there are five minister's priorities, and based on that, we're able now to see how we're linking it with the department's strategic plan. So we have already touched on that. I don't want to repeat it, but it's what we have taken into account as a department. Then it was not only to link minister's priorities without looking at what are the MTSF targets. To say this is what is sitting on the MTSF target, and how now that minister's priority make sure that it will help us to deliver on the MTSF target, and what is our target. Even this chair, I don't think I need to repeat this clear what those issues are. If that was of time, but we're looking. Chair, we said in the department, so say what is our DHA end state vision based on all what has been given to us through the NTP, the MTSS, the minister's priorities. Then the management of the department has developed a vision for Home Affairs, which they believe will transform all the elements of organization, people, processes and organization, and funding model. A new sustainable model of Home Affairs must ensure that DHA will manage a secure national identity system that will be at the heart of security, service delivery, and an efficient state. The identity and status of all persons in South Africa will enable access to efficient and affordable services. There will be interfaces with all departments and authorized private institutions. Levels of crime will be minimized, such as identity tests, qualifications, insurance fraud, and illegal sale of land or housing. As Chair, we are aware what is our relationship with SAPRIC, which is working with the banks to make sure that we kept this, and even the insurance industry will link with us in terms of that data. So before they pay an insurance, they will be able to check with the department, though there are still issues around that. And then we are looking at DHA services, which will be easily accessible to a range of secured channels, including via the internet, mobile solutions, and partnership with other departments and commercial sectors. We'll be coming now to our issues we did introduce about the e-channel, which are working together with the banks. We are looking at some way immigration is used strategically and securely to achieve national and regional goals, and the documentation of legitimate visitors are facilitated rapidly. Patriotic, professional, and human officials can adequately protect the security and integrity of its people, systems, services, and infrastructure. I will still come back to that matter. The status of asylum seekers is securely, humanly, and efficiently determined, and refugees are assisted in a coordinated way by the state and NGO. I will also come back to that, what we'll be doing going forward to do that. We're looking at a model which must be found that ensures that sustainable funding of Home Affairs with the net gain to the fiscal to enable secure e-governance and e-commerce across the state and the economy. This will assist in attracting domestic and international investment. More Home Affairs can modify its processes, then it will help for so that people, they apply for a visa. We want to see a situation that they apply it online and get it within a day. Home Affairs must be repositioned as a modern, mature, and a professional department. Minister has taken a cabinet memo to cabinet, which has already been approved, that Home Affairs must be recognized as a secure department. I will be coming to that, what we'll be doing now in this year to implement that. Already they've indicated that Home Affairs must now go be a full member of the JCPS cluster, but it's not going to end there. So I think it's important for us, not in detail, what we think are the challenges in the department and how we'll be dealing with that. As I said, the effective and efficient management of asylum, kind of refugee environment, including the relocation of refugee centers close to borderlines and management of economic migrants. As Chair already aware that we did implement as back when a dispensation, and now started 1st of March, we are implementing now a Lesotho dispensation which will allow Basotos to apply for a business permit, study permit, and work permit. And we are looking at improving our areas of appeals, as we already said that there is a capacity constraint around our SCRA and RAP in Marabasta. And now we recall that in the previous meeting we did talk about us getting land next to the borderline in order for us to build a refugee processing center. I will come back to that now, where we are. The issue of overall of the border management and provision of acceptable report to the center. Ministers talked about that among the six provinces of the minister. Then yes, we'll establish the border management agency. We'll look at transforming the permitting environment to support national interests. We will pilot new management models and the infrastructure for development of the ports of entry. I'll come to that. And the issue of capacitating our inspectorate. Then the issue of historical underfunding is still a challenge within the department, but we are saying that by developing and advocating a business case for the repositioning of DHA, so based on that cabinet approval, this year we'll be preparing a business case in terms of what is the mandate of the Department of Home Affairs, and if it is operating as a secured department, what funding model which we can come up to be able to do that. And then we'll also be continuing with our implementation of the agribusiness process, working with the banks, which will come back to that as well. As it is still a challenge, our dependence to public works and CETA, so we have to find strategic ways in order to deal with this matter. That now Home Affairs is in now under the security cluster. We are following a process whereby now there was a decision taken by the cabinet that the security department might not follow the CETA process. So now we're following that process, which I think it will solve our problem. Yes, it's still an issue, the non-integration of systems across the departments. That's why I want to invest in the modernization of the Department of Home Affairs. Then it's still about a challenge in terms of lack of efficient records management in the department. However, we were given 10 million rand to digitize our documents, so we are approaching State South Africa to assist us in that regard. With all what we said we understand, but there's still a lack of capacity in some of the critical areas. Inspectorate, legal services, risk management, IT is one of the backbones now of changing how the department works. We want to capacitate more our counter corruption and security services. On the issue of fight against unlawful activities, we are there in the media and how we are fighting this and using a project we call it program called Visa Masina, where we are really dealing with the issues of corruption within the department. to get into improvement of issues of governance and administration practices in the department. And we believe that if we can ensure the training of our staff, you know, to make sure that we bring professionalism in the department and caring when people deal with people, that will give us the required leadership and management and capabilities. Yes, we'll continue as a department to look at our organizational structure and operating model, which now will be based on the new business case which will be submitted in the department, and always make sure that people and processes are secured in the department. So having said that, now I'll be just going now, zooming on what are the priorities which were set for the department and are in the 16-17 based on the resources we have. Well, in the previous year, we had 36 targets, but this year we've reduced them to 32 based on looking at the implications of the budget cuts and human resources in the department. So we have a decrease on our targets, but we'll come back to that, what the targets now we have. And there are targets which we kept them the same, like our smart card and the birth registration, in order for us to be able to have the resources which are equal to what we can deliver. So this lies, what is the DSA outcomes? I'm not going to go back to that one, it's known by the committee. I'll just move straight now to the targets. So what we have, as we indicated in that slide, that now in the year we've got 19 on administration, 5 on services and citizens, and 8 on immigration. So I'll be going now to those targets. So target 1 under administration is that this year we want that death, marriage and death processes be developed into the life culture. If you go to our offices currently, we find that some offices will have dual processes. A smart card and a passport, which is automated, but your birth, death and marriage is still paper and bits to use ink and all that. So we want to automate that process as well in this financial year. So when we go to our office now, all of it will be automated. And then we want, this has been an issue as we reported to the committee last time, that the issuance of the refugee ID books and travel documents has always been delayed around that. So we want now to, even that process now to do a life capture, so that once now my status has been determined in a refugee reception office, then to go to apply for a smart card and a passport should be the same. Then it will make things move fast. And the key one is really the end-to-end permitting system now developed. With the experience which we have, by only automating the front end through a VFS and the back end at headquarters, we were able to meet those targets for our permits and permanent residents. But the key issue is the foreign missions abroad. So we are looking now at having an end-to-end permitting system which will be online. Which say when we come now that in South Africa now we apply for a card and a passport on e-line, that's what we're looking at. Because once we get to that level, then we'll be able to fast-track the issue of economic growth through attracting critical skills. Because we'll apply for a permit today, get a certificate at headquarters, send it back, so we'll be able to achieve that. So the next thing we'll be busy now developing that system. Then as the biometrics minister talked about this, so what we are reporting here is that we have now an interim biometric system which was implemented now at War Tambo, Kinshasa, Cape Town and Lanseria. That process we're still going to be rolling it out. It's what the minister was saying, that is on our operational plan to make sure that we proceed now to our land border post. But this one is the full biometric now EMCS which we'll be developing. So that system will be linking now with our MPR, linking it with MCS, so that now as you apply for your visa, wherever you apply for it, you get that full biometric, and then it goes and verifies to the other systems as well. Because the one now which you are currently having, it does verify that you were here last time, you are still the same person who's crossing that other border, but we want it to link with all the systems which we have. So that's what we'll be developing now next year. So I wanted to make it clear the difference between the current, which will be rolling it out, and as well as the full biometric system which will be included. Then the other, as we have indicated, the issue of training, which is linked with the Metapula project. We're still looking at training at least about 300 managers in the following year. Then the important one for us is this second phase now of repositioning competence. So next year we'll be busy with that business case for a modern secure DSA now submitted back to cabinet. Well, now the cabinet has approved that the department can continue with this. But now in the following year now we'll be starting now to build that business case, and then in the year after come up with the legislative process, because now Home Affairs must be established based on an act. So there will be an act of Home Affairs which will be clearly spelled out how it would be as a short department. Well, these ones, Chair, are more on the governance issues. To say yes, to submit financial statements by the state, the year and monetary report, annual report to Parliament, and quarterly report. We will still with less money, but we still have to maintain that whatever vacancy we have in the department, we have to comply with the norm that must keep it below 10%. We'll continue with that. Then, Minister, his priority is that we need to look at these 6 land ports. So the approach for the department has to go through a PPP process. So what we are able to have now by year end is what we call a treasury approval one. What that process means is it's a lot of processes which you have to follow, because a transaction advisor, which has already been appointed, is made up of various skills, environmentalists, engineers for bridges, and people who are more finance, and people who are legal. Also remember that the port of Ains is not only on one side, it's often on both sides of the border. So we need to have now those skills to come and tell us to say, how can we improve that infrastructure? So you follow all that process, and thereafter I must get up to National Treasury to approve now what we call the treasury approval one. Once we have that, then in the following year we'll be able now to go to bid and go and advertise the tender and appoint a service provider which will be able to look at this. So we'll be doing this through a PPP process. And then in issues of corruption, as we said, that we will still continue to bring awareness to our staff members, and then wanted to deal with all reported cases, 64% within 90 days. And then we will also do detection reviews and security evaluations on our processes. And now wanted even to engage the presidents. They said they would be looking, helping us on our bank process, so that we can be able to look at loopholes. And then we'll look at age threats and risk assessment conducted in terms of their needs. And then a vetting is an issue for us, that we have 620 vetting files finalized, but we are not responsible to issue the vetting certificate. We still need to submit to state South Africa. And then in terms of the main issue for us to really communicate with the public, people, they must understand what are the processes which we have in the department. So we'll continue with that in terms of corporate communication, media relations, public awareness, and we've got an internal newsletter called IKAYA, which helps us to communicate with our staff. And then there will be media briefings, and there will be ministers and these rules, and then the applications which now this minister will issue a publication to the entire country and say this is where Home Affairs is, what is the topic, what dealing with it and all that. And then also we'll also have two campaigns conducted. Then the last one, Chair, is what I talked about. That would recall that we wanted to build what we called a asylum processing center. So in the previous years, we delivered the issue of the land. We reported to the committee that that land was finally transferred to the department. So what now will be dealing with it now is the feasibility study, including financial model for building now the processing center. So that now in the following year we can start now to build. Then with regard to citizen affairs, Chair, is where we said we didn't change in terms of the number of the beds registered within 30 days. As we said, one of the vehicles which we are using here is the connection of the hospitals and also to allocate people. So looking at the resources we have kept that target the same. And then with the smart card, also that target we keep it the same, though now we'll be having a new process as well with the banks, but in order to keep that target based on the resources which we have. We still continue to issue the IDs at 90% of IDs will still be issued within 54 working days. But check that number would be reducing in terms as now we're able to give people more smart cards and then cover other areas that the issue of the green ID books in terms of the number. But what we're saying that whatever number we get, we must still issue with that. And the reissues, people again will apply for reissues. It will be 95% of that. And then with the passports, we'll look at 90% of machine readable passports within the live capture. So, Chair, on this matter, we've already approached the minister as well to look at the issue that with the passports, with all the risks which we have, that we're looking, once we cover all these 178 offices and well as the banks, to look at the discontinuation of issuing of the manual passport, so that in South Africa we only issue passports through the life capture. But that matter is still considered by the minister. Then with immigration, yes, the target is that now the DMA in 2017 must be launched. So you know now that we are at NEDLAC to finalize that process, and once we are clear looking at bringing now that bill to Parliament. So we are still progressing well within the NEDLAC process, but once we finalize it, then I will come back to Parliament just to process the bill. And then the issue of that integrated management strategy, we'll be preparing it and approved by the minister. And then, as minister has indicated already, that by the end of March, we want to finalize now the green paper. So now in the following year, we'll be working now on the white paper on international migration. And so whilst there are those six big ports which we're talking about, we will still look, say for when it talks about the funding which we have, we'll still continue looking at about 15 ports of entry just to improve their infrastructure, whilst the other six will be deficit on the big project. And then with our permits, as we said that now we want that 85% of permanent residents be adjudicated within 8 months. But Chair, with a call last day, we're talking about this matter and says, no, but not every permanent resident, so we're specific. Those who are with regards to the critical skills, 27B, general work, 36A, and business. Because the other permanent residents are more risky, like your relatives and all that. So that is not in that category, we're focusing on that. Then with the business and the general work visas, we want to adjudicate them within 8 weeks of application. And then the critical skills, we want to deal with 75% within 4 weeks. But as I was talking, I said, but want to develop that e-permitting system, because this is based on the current manual process which we have. So I said, once we develop that system, then those time frames will be reduced further. Those with the colleagues can compare that green ID book, we're talking about 54 days, whereas the smart cards, you can get it within a day. It's just a question of distributing it, which makes it 3 days, 5 days, but the maximum is 7 days. So that's what we are looking at that. And then we'll continue. We've got one visa permitting center in Gauteng, and then I want to expand to the two, one in PE and another one in Japan, and then so that I can make us work. Now that premium center is really looking after business, so business is able to go in one area, because in these centers we are together with other departments like DTI is in the same place, Department of Labor, so that a person who's looking for business in South Africa doesn't go to this store next week and that one. Everything is in one area, which facilitates things to move there faster. So now we'll hand over now to the CFO to deal with the budget now, which is supporting what we have said. And I said that I will come back on this week.
Thank you, Chairperson, Gigi, committee members. The task given to us by National Treasury is 7.196 billion rand. If we look at the 16-17 financial here, the baseline reduction is 21 million rand on goods and services. We have accommodated that baseline reduction in our projections for in our allocations for 2016-17. In as far as this MTF allocation letter is concerned, you will just note at the bottom there is a compensation of employee ceiling imposed by National Treasury. That's 3146 billion rand. That's the maximum amount we can spend on compensation of employees. If you also look at the 17-18 and 18-19 financial years, you'll see that there are baseline reductions proposed by National Treasury on compensation of employees, which are significant. On the allocation for 16-17 for the departments, we used the baseline allocation of 7.16 billion as given to us by National Treasury. We move some money from goods and services to fully cover our compensation of employees budget. That 3.2 billion rand figure, we'll give you the breakdown of those figures just now. That 3.216 billion rand buys us 9,902 posts. That's current warm bodies plus some vacancies. So our establishment, as it's the 1st of April going forward, would be, the funded establishment would be 9,902 posts, but we'll come to the details of that. Goods and services, as I said, were reduced to make sure that our warm bodies are adequately covered. The departmental agencies is our transfers to the IEC and the Representative Political Parties Fund. Those funds are earmarked, we can't use it for anything else. I said I would come to the details of compensation of employees. This slide gives a breakdown of the full post per unit as at the 31st of January 2016. If you recall, I said the compensation of employees budget is 3.2 billion. If you look at what we currently have, it's 3.112. It gives a breakdown per branch. The Water Management Agency has 5 posts. The cost of those 5 posts is 2.8 million, and then you can go through each and every branch. Finance is 268 posts at a cost of 89 million rand. You may ask, why are there differences in, if you look at the number of posts and the cost values, clearly some posts are, or some businesses. tenants use higher value posts, and therefore their costings would be higher. Just the last example, Standing Committee on Refugees Affairs, there are 13 people, the budget for compensation of employees or the cost of those 13 people are 5 million rands. On the provinces, that's 945. We also give you the breakdown of the numbers per province. This is where service delivery happens. That's where most of our people are employed, and that's the breakdown per province. Eastern Cape, 786 posts at a cost of 245 million. Free State, 551 posts at a cost of 166 million. In posts, we have made provision for posts for the contact center. It's 136 posts. Some of those people have started, but the provision made for that is 32 million rands. Then we had issued some offer letters for some posts. There are 200 of those, and the breakdown is given of that. We have also made provision for 8 new funded posts as from the 1st of April 2016. We have the details of those. But our projected salary bill going forward would be 3216, and it matches the figure indicated in the earlier slide. On goods and services, we did a similar analysis. We have a goods and services budget of 2.2 billion rand. There are some earmarked funds for WILE, border posts, EDMS, and property. Those funds can't be used for anything else but those line items. Then what we did as a department, we took our goods and services allocation, deducted the earmarked funds, and then met with business and branches over a two-day period to work out the contractual obligations. What must be paid, and where we have no discretion as to whether we want to pay that or not. The contractual commitments is 890 more. We have the details of that contractual commitments, and that left us with an amount of 408 million rand, which I can call discretionary spend. That's amount left for travel and subsistence, accommodation, venues and facilities, where we have an option whether to use that or not. We split also on slide 47 the goods and services allocation between head office, at head office, between various things. The reason we would like to highlight is that some of the services are centralized. Our fleet is central. Our property payments are central. Our IT is central. So it may look as though administration has a bulk of the money, but it's because we pay something centrally, like telephones is another example. On the provinces, we try not to reduce the budgets of provinces too much, as I said, that's where service delivery happens. But this is the allocations for goods and services for the provinces on slide 48 for the provinces. All the provinces were affected, but the total of the subtotal for provinces is 133 million rands. Total balance is back to 1.299 billion rands. Down on the budgets and pension.
Well, thanks, and just to close, based on all the scenarios we have, say over the coming months, as I said, the department will produce this business case for the position of the DHA as a more dense and the professional department. The following principles will guide the development of the business case. The DHA must have a specific enabling legislation so that it can secure its systems and work effectively to enable development and security. This will require a sustainable operational and organizational model that can provide efficient and secure services. The funding model must increase overall public and private revenue, so as effective savings that will offset the cost of a modernized DHA. We'll continue to share with the modernization program by finalizing our wire scope with the full automation of front and back offices and developing e-systems for migration. respond with a model for service delivery channels through projects such as eChannel, the modern life capture solution. And with regard to resources, DHA will need to work smarter, as Minister has indicated, with its available resources and do more with less. Initiatives such as video conferencing, voice over IP, electronic document systems will be considered to ensure savings are incurred. We'll continue with the efforts to push back fraud and corruption related activities through projects such as Visa Masina. Chair, I want to give a commitment that all targets in the DHA annual performance plan for 2016-17 are fully funded, and the CFO will split what is a contractual obligation and all that. So I will now hand over to the minister.
You have it. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we have heard the story of the DHA. And I think there's a short question that one should really ask now. Because it looks like this situation of DHA moving to a security class has not been responded to in terms of financial allocation and your business case, whatever that needs to be submitted. Is there any possibility that when that kind of an exercise is concluded, we may see the DHA coming with an amended APP? Is that correct? I just wanted us to go past the question. Minister and the DG. Now, if you can get past this question, is there? If you make the business case for you having been included in the security cluster, and then there are additional resources to respond to that assignment, and then you may need to review your target to comply with that assignment, are we going to see an amended APP after conclusion of that? Or are we going to continue with this until the next financial year? And then that's what I just wanted you to respond to.
No, as you indicated, remember this project, the budget for 16-17 is closed. So now what we're talking about is what we prepare this year, so that now by the time now we get to the budget of 17-18, then the standard the impact will come. But we believe that once we have classified properly and our mandate is understood better, then yes, there will be a change, but it will only be for the next. So this APP is not going to change its target around that, is to make sure that we go to cabinet back and then we engage even on the process of legislation and all that. So it's not something which will be happening in the 16-17 as far as funding.
Okay, now thank you very much. Honorable members, I'm sure now that there is a little bit of clarity on that. We have heard, and are there any issues that we should raise with them? They have put in a lot of targets, but they have cut down because of the belt tightening, and obviously there are a few things that are not going to be done that they used to do. And then economic meltdown. Some say so. And then we get affected because we wanted to be part of the global global economy. Now we are actually suffering because of our participation at that level, which of course we cannot ordinarily avoid. Right. The department and the minister, they are here. I think I just want to indicate that the minister, of course, has already indicated that there is another meeting around about 11. So before half past 11, then you will be disappearing. If there are any clarifications that require me, the sooner we actually pose them, the better.
Now the minister says it's time to change, 25 to 11. Now it's true that we are meeting during a difficult time, as the minister was opening this meeting by saying the minister of finance did allude to the fact that we have to cut down, but I don't think he was referring to this committee, to this department in particular. He was referring to other things that are necessary in the country, because the job that you are doing as an officer is very important. I think you can plead to him that, you know, he must not cut down our budget, yeah. But I just want to get a clarity here, DG. Last time, I think we have alluded to the fact that we are struggling in the department in terms of human resources. And when you were not here, I did also ask specifically to the minister, what are we doing? Because I think it affects our work as a department, and the minister did promise that, you know, the issue of the human resource will be looked at. So now, on page 17, lack of capacity, all those critical areas, I think I'm very worried if, as a department, while we are complaining about under-resourced in terms of human resource, but we also have these challenges as a department, how are we moving forward on that one? Minister, on the fence as well, I'm not clear. I got the DG was when he was doing the presentation that he's going to come back to clarify on the issue of the banks when as a department we are partnering with the bank. And last time I did also raise some concerns that if the Department of Home Affairs is going to work with the bank, I have much worried because those details, even there is a fraud in the bank, if we are going to work using their IT system in the bank, are we not going to be opening a can of worms whereby the criminals will be able to access to our banking details and so on and so on. But I remember that you also tried to clarify that the bank system will also help us, but I had a different view, of course. The IT system as well. All the time when you make presentation here, DG, I also consulted the minister when he was here. When he was presenting about the port of entry IT system, and then he said no. On our port of entry, especially on our airports, we're using SAR network. But I remember very well, it's your outcry every time when you come here. One of the challenges of this department is IT system. So now, last time, DG, you told us that you even have raised this issue with the minister, and the minister is taking to the cabinet. So I think we can use that opportunity while the minister is here. What is the cabinet resolution on this issue of IT system, because it's affecting this department quite badly. On page 15, Chair, there is a presentation or a slide that talks about lack of efficient records management, and you're suggesting that you can partner with SSS. I want to ask this specifically to the minister, because I'll link it to the global issue of IT. As the court ruling was talking about lack of addresses, and I did raise with them, with IEC, if we can work with SSS and other departments, this issue of addresses. Now, it's coming back here to say there's a lack of efficient record management, and the department is trying to partner with SSS and so on. The issue of project DG, you have touched it on today, as we are saying we're in a building stage. You are still owing us. I'm happy that the minister is there and the CFO is there. We are talking about money. How much is the project? That question is still going to arrive. We want to get a picture of how much does it cost us as a department, that project. I'll pause on that one. Oh, the last one, Chair, on the issue of the HR. I just want to get a clarity on this issue of compensation of the staff. You have the same compensation. Your compensation is down. You also alluded to the fact that 5 positions for PMA. My understanding is that, according to the presentation here, that the PMA will be launched next day. Are we having already the staff members that we are compensating under PMA? And I also raised a question here, and the chair, which is the PMA, which is very good. I agree with the notion of the PMA. But as a committee member, if we can be told which country this PMA has been implemented, in order for us, if we take decisions, we take a decision with something that we know. unlike that you are relying on the presentation by the department, of which at later stage you are going to be shocked if you don't have those things. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being very economic today. And then Narapiti, that will be followed by Tatoso.
Thank you, Minister and the DG, for your presentation of your annual performance plan. And Minister and the DG, yes, we have received your annual performance plan and even your projection on financial issues. I'm still asking, despite of tightening of the belt, last year, Minister, most of the managers, they are 18. I think Home Affairs is more of Hollywood. People are acting in their positions. And I'm not yet, you know, satisfied that those people who are acting in those posts, is it funded post or not funded post? And, you know, Minister and DG, if you are acting, I think that person is capable because you believe in that person, you know, to really to take that responsibility of executing her duties. And acting for so long, it causes the people become demotivated, the people become burnt out, and really we don't want to have people who are burnt out in the home affairs and demotivated. So I'm asking, despite of tightening of the belt, because it can be cited also as a, you know, as a matter. When are you going to fill up those posts? I think even the treasury will never allow people to act for so long in those positions. That one really is a no. A kind of, you know, position. So that one, please. And I was so disgruntled because of this annual performance. Yesterday, you know, I was breaking. You don't like to break about Home Affairs. You know, the work that you are doing. Modernization. And this guy says that, no way, you cannot tell me about this modernization thing. Somebody is selling those mascots. And when we are talking about reduce of fraud and all those things, I'm just asking if ever people can be able to hack or really to do something fishy on the issues of the smart card. I'm really disgruntled, you know, emanating from what we were discussing yesterday. Because I was showing him my smart card. On the issue of this border management, I hope it's not going to be an April Fool. DG. First of April 2017. So, please, Minister, they must not make you a joke. We want to see, really want to see something happening on that 1st of April, on April Fool Day, with the border management, because it says that by 1st April 2017, the border management will be launched. Can we change that day? Or can we make something? It should not be April Fool. We welcome the issue of automation of the marriages and the death thing, but thank you very much for all this, what you have presented. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You can proceed, Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. One or two short political comments of my Honorable Minister. Chair, let me say firstly that I think that generally the vision and the political direction that Home Affairs generally sets for itself, in my view, is very, very positive. Where we always disagree is around the ability of the department to implement its long-term plans and its vision. Part of the problem, we believe, is largely the capacity of the department to be able to achieve its long-term objectives. So on almost every occasion when we sit in the portfolio committee, we listen to the very elaborate plans going forward, much of which is very positive. Like, for example, today, very clear that the department is making more and more attempts to try and modernize its systems, move more towards latest technology, innovative ideas, and in the hope that those kinds of steps will try and reduce the levels of fraud and corruption. I think that those are the things that would make the department a first world department to operate. And for that, we will be proud of. So when we disagree and when we debate with each other and criticize the department, it's done in the broader principle of making sure that all of us benefit from and be proud of what we were able to have. So I wanted to put that on the table, Honorable Minister, for your sake. We'll have an opportunity at some point to be able to argue about some of the weaknesses in the department, and I'll save that for later occasions. I'm very impressed by the real genuine attempts by the department to try and put in more and more IT systems, the live capture. I think we started to see the turnaround and the delivery of the smart IDs, all of which is very impressive. But the one problem I worry about is our ability to be able to manage this connectivity problem. It's a massive stumbling block, and I'd like to get some response on make us feel secure in the sense that the department will be able to fix these problems around internet connectivity once and for all. It affects almost every aspect of Home Affairs work, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. The new regulation of hospitals, the problems there, we know of as far as internet connectivity problems are concerned. A number of Home Affairs offices are always offline, and great frustration to people who stand in queues for many, many hours and have to return the very next day. So I think you know all of the details. I don't have to go into any further details around it. But give us a sense of hope that this thing is going to be fixed in this year. Because those complaints just are on the increase over the last few months. Chair, I just want to deal with the issue of fraud and corruption. I see the target as far as trying to finalize the percentage of cases that have been reported. But I also pick up that there were only two detection reviews for the year. Now, I think that it's good to, of course, to deal with cases that are reported and criminals in jail rather than in government. But if you're not going to prevent it from happening and have more reviews, you're going to constantly have these fraud and corruption cases. So I'm not sure that only two reviews is sufficient with the number of fraud and corruption cases that we're starting to pick up. It would make sense to me that the more reviews you have, the more you'll be able to tighten up systems and the less corruption we'll be able to have. So I'd like to hear what your comments on that is. Chair, much has been said around the reduction in the budget and the impact of our economy on Home Affairs itself. Mm-hmm. So I won't go into that detail, but I would like to ask a very direct question, and that is this. Clearly it's going to have an impact on the number of staff, and honourable members have mentioned that already. Perhaps maybe the Minister can sketch a picture for us. To what extent is Home Affairs, the services that it provides to the people and the public, going to be affected by the budget cuts? I heard the 9,902 posts. How many posts will remain unfilled over the next 3 years? And to what extent will it have an impact on service delivery? I find it quite interesting that the BMA only has five posts. I mean, when I go through the bill, it's
seems to me like it's this massive monster that's going to control everything that goes in and out of the country. I'm going to do it with hard people, and unless I'm, this is now just phase one and there are going to be more people, if you can answer that part. Chair, I don't seem to find the, I see the plan and the targets to roll out the biometrics at all points of entry. Maybe I'm missing it, but I'm not seeing the increase in expenditure to get that. Is there some way that you can maybe point it out for me, please? And then I was impressed with the comments that the Director General makes when he says we need to do more with less. But then earlier on in his presentation, he also said that a number of the targets remain unchanged because we don't have the resources to be able to produce the targets. So the same question I put back to you, how are you going to be able to do more with less as far as the targets on IDs first issued, the 54-day target I'm referring to, because those haven't changed at all. So clearly you're not going to be able to do more there with the less that you have. That's what it is, and that's what it is. And lastly, Chair, I want to say thank you to the Director General for you and for putting the premium centre in Devon. Maybe we'll be able to make better use of it.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Madam.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, let me first thank the department, the ministry, for fighting corruption that we clearly see on our TV. We've seen it in Richards Bay, we have seen it in a number of areas. And yesterday, on my screen, I saw the effectiveness of the border control when cartels from Mozambique were caught, and really we appreciate that. Doesn't mean that we do not have concerns, but well done. We are happy about what you've been doing these days. Secondly, we understand the need to increase the budget in foreign affairs, despite the general mandate of having to do more with less. Because I believe that what flows from the changing mandate of the Department of Home Affairs requires more resources, it requires more capacity. We have changed the mandate because we want to feel safe, we want to be safe. And every South African wants to be safe. We've got to pay for our safety, because clearly we do not have enough inspectors, we do not have enough immigration staff, and so forth. I believe that despite the need to use less for more, there is a justifiable case in the instance of Home Affairs, given comparisons now that it begins to have with the police and with the SANDF for the safety of our beloved motherland. The second area would be the case of identity fraud. Identity fraud should be more severe. And I do not know whether the department is drafting laws or measures to make sentencing for those who break the law, particularly around identity fraud, to make sure that they are sentenced much more severely in order for us to make sure that there is a deterrent in this time of crime. Yesterday, we saw people allegedly having reproduced smart cards, but I do not know whether they electronically they proved smart, but as by appearance it looked as if those cards were, from what we could see from the TV, they looked much similar. So if so, perhaps what are the plans to make sentencing much more severe in this regard? Because the whole country is concerned around the issues of identity fraud. It affects a lot of people. Some people are declared dead while they are alive. The program of phobia, it is called Home Affairs. What is it called? Horror of Home Affairs. They keep on showing this, what is happening there. But we know that this is not the whole truth, but what is much, what matters more is our identity to be safe as citizens of South Africa. The other question is the BMA. I think I agree with the Honorable Hussein that the impact on the budget and on the losses doesn't seem to reflect that we are moving in that direction. And then when are we going to have a fully fledged BMA? And with this process of NEDLAC, what exactly is being decided, discussed there, which causes now this delay? Is it workers' rights? What exactly causes such delay? Because I understand that a lot of delay is with NEDLAC and not with the department. And fourthly, when we went to the borders of Northwest, Southwest Africa, that is Namibia, and South Africa, we found that the immigration officers were short of uniforms. Are we addressing that problem now? How far are we? Is every member on the border now in full uniform? Lastly, the issue of the information on the voter form. About 32% of the voters, of people in the voters' roll, would not be eligible to vote, particularly around rural areas and the shanks, if the effect of the court were going to be interpreted in a sensible way. So you wipe out the right of a third of the people because of one judge. And I'm not saying that that judgment was unfair. I'm not capacitated to make judgments on judgments. But clearly, looking from what we have, the information that you have received, a third of voters would lose their right to vote. So, what is happening in as far as that is concerned? Are we managing that properly? Are we managing the stakeholders properly? Is this judgment going to supersede the agreement of political parties at the IEC? Because at the end of the day, there are these meetings where political parties decide what is possible and what is not possible. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. From my side, I think that the CFO of Merkel
thank you for the presentation, though, and it's late, but I just looked at a few questions which I want to do. The first one is on the outcome. When I talk about this outcome, I'm seeing a speech there from the department that talks to God, all people are protected. And he says, and noting that we are talking about this identity of unknown people. So my problem is that when we were in oversight, maybe now that the minister is here, I again asked this question, which I asked in that oversight. I think, well, the issue of not praying 40. When we were told that after 20 days, we should be a full overstage, then what happens to them is they have overstayed overstayed. They have overstayed having 20 days. It was said that they are sent back to their country. But the unfortunate part of it, when they arrive there, they are not clean there. It is said that they don't belong to that country. Then they are taken back here. And then when I ask the question, what happens when they are back here? Now I got a reply that says they are thus being absorbed in the community. When you talk about the safety, notice that there's a lot that is happening. There are tax facilities, there's tax facilities. I don't say only the foreign national sales, but that are doing this drug businesses. But because when you look at this oversight, you understand that there's a lot that is happening. For example, I was at the committee that went to after the to probe the violence against foreign nationals at Debe. People were complaining there, saying that you have a salon here. The problem, you have a salon here. That's that the front is a salon, but it's a back of the address. And now, looking at that, that's why I'm asking this question. What else can be done rather than just being absorbed, this forest has been just absorbed to our community? Because I don't think that our communities are safe. If you did so, because I don't think those people will be known as much about the unknown ones if they are just there in our community. Secondly, on page 14, bullet 3, when you talk about the status of asylum seekers, and human determinants, sometimes we hear the story of that some of the foreign nationals come here as asylum seekers. But as we protect them in the country, but they also sometimes go back to see their relatives. Now, my question is, if a person is an asylum seeker, to my understanding, he needs protection from the country. Now, when he goes back again to see the relatives, what does the department do to that asylum seeker? To my understanding now, he is no more asylum seeker, he is just a refugee. If he can just go back again, so the question is, what do you do with that? Again, there's the issue that talks to the assistance by the NGOs. When you talk about the refugees, you also being assisted by the NGOs and state. And what about, do you really think the NGOs, maybe some of them are then, but there are problems where you can understand that sometimes the NGOs have got also a hidden agenda, because at the same time, when we were on that oversight again about the problem of that violence, people were saying, here's an NGO, it is registered, but at the back, there's another thing that is done, just like a brothel, what they said, an example of having a brothel at the back. Being an NGO in France with a certificate. So, but then there is another thing that is being done. So people are saying those things. So that's why I'm asking that if I talk about this protection, these things, which seems to be just small things, but they are really for the safety, they're really next for the safety of our people in South Africa. I'm not as a reporter, but I'm just opening up a discussion on this issue. And lastly, on page 17, also the issue which Honorable Shobesh asked about the lack of capacity. Are you doing any headhunting? As you know that even the State of National Affairs, as the President said, we must attract critical skills from even the foreign nationals. Not just the example just from the party to sell cigarettes here. Because that's what the critical skills got people to sell cigarettes here and peanuts. So, do you make headhunting? And then also, do you attract to the foreign nationals who have critical skills to assist in our country? Thank you, Sir President.
Thank you very much. The CFO, do you have any projected expected income that you would expect Treasury to return to yourselves for spending materials? But is it included in the budget or not? And then the other issue is much of the work that has been planned, DG, is what we want to do and move forward. But there is one aspect which is very serious within the department, that of correcting our civic government. Where a person wants an ID document to change the name or the surname, correcting or whatever, and the other ones, like as it has just been said here, some person whose ID is blocked because the identity has been stolen, is eventually been said is dead, but he has got the ID in his hand, is alive. You know, it's the correction of those documents. It looks like it is a major issue that makes many of our people to be unhappy. And it looks like it is supposed to be actually taking too much of our effort as well, because it actually affects the livelihoods of people. Where a person is proclaimed to be married when she thinks that she's not married and that she has got a good husband to be, and all of a sudden they said that you are married and the husband ran away, and then the person doesn't get a genuine marriage, and then where you want to go and get some loan in the bank, and then you are told that you are owing a lot of money because somebody has stolen your identity, has run around all the shops and create all problems for you, then I can't get credit for my car, can't do anything. And of course, really genuine mistakes that happen where you have got a person that can identify that this is a Pakistanian or whatever on the ID book. It's a face, you can see, but then the name says it's a dope. You know, you're not a dope, but when you see this person, it's really not a dope, it cannot be a dope. And then, it's not a serious ID book. Proper, not that the ID book has been tampered, no. And then those kind of things, as I'm saying, is that, is there any real plan to actually show that these kind of things they are attended to? Because they really affect the livelihoods of certain people that their identities have been stolen. Probably sometimes we should actually call Treasure when, especially DG, we have actually sorted out of the business case and whether there are any additional resources that are required, so that we really come and have some sort of a conversation with the Treasurer and the department. You know, also really to test whether there is a correct consciousness of the mandate that is given to Home Affairs and the requisite resources to really fulfill that mandate. Because we have a feeling as a commission now that even if you have not been given that mandate to be the security class, the department is highly underfunded because of the scope of work of actually looking after almost everybody that is on in the country now and those that have passed on. Almost everybody, inclusive of those that have passed on, that still sit in the records of Home Affairs, that Home Affairs must keep that record, must manage that record. Like when we talk about digitizing the records, probably even the date will have, their records will have to be digitized. vitality of the order and order. So therefore, this department needs more resources now, let alone the additional mandate that is coming in. Probably then there may be a need for us to actually engage with Treasury and yourself, and then really just check whether we are on the same path when it comes to the consciousness of what is expected of Home Affairs and Department, you know, of the sovereignty of this country and the citizens. Minister, I think there is a sporadic thing that has happened in Kandao, where I think it's some foreign nationals that it's alleged that they've killed somebody there for stealing, and then the community there as well have ransacked their shops, cleaned their shops. I think I think as a community we need really to condemn anybody that takes those into his or her hands, and also of course condemn those that are actually looting other people's properties in the form of the shops of those foreign nationals. Then we really should plead that whoever suspects that people are stealing from their properties must try and report those things and ensure that people are locked up rather than taking the law into their hands. And our communities as well, irrespective of the challenges that we are having, but we can't go on a rampage of actually looting and stealing and making other people's properties our own and do as we please. I'm raising this minister because it happens on the base of the locals stealing from foreign national shops. There is a likelihood that it may actually be elevated to the wrong level when it is just simply element of criminality and theft and that's it. And then we really need just simply to attend to it and manage it and see that it is correctly categorized as real criminal acts, people stealing, others shooting somebody else, others breaking into the shops and stealing as well. And I think those are just a few comments. You may proceed, Minister, together with the DG accordingly.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will respond to some of the questions, and I'm sure the DG will note those that I have not responded to. Let me start by saying, for the longest of time, the Department of Home Affairs has been misconstrued, perhaps to put it mildly, viewed as a low-level service delivery department which required low levels of skills, and whose only job was to deliver documents to the applicant and leave it there. The end result has been that its resources, its budget has reflected that understanding, or poor understanding, if I may put it bluntly, of its role. And over the years, its budget in net terms has grown negatively, which means that in a number of ways the department is not able to discharge adequately its mandate in terms of providing sufficient physical infrastructure, the human resources required, and the skills required to manage the department in general, its finances in particular, as well as its assets. part of the repositioning or realignment of the department that we presented to cabinet for its adoption, and part of the repositioning that honorable members are going to see in the department going forward, or let me say central to this repositioning, is going to be the establishment of a clear understanding of the four pillars upon which the Department of Home Affairs rests. First, the Department of Home Affairs plays a critical role in the facilitation of economic development in the country. The documents that we issue are not posters to be hung on the walls in people's living rooms or bedrooms. The IT enables a South African child to study, a young adult to seek and get employment. It enables us to open bank accounts, to enter into transactions with financial institutions. And an ID document in wrong hands can cost the country up to billions of rand, as it is reported by the financial services industry in terms of identity theft, identity fraud. A passport enables a South African to travel abroad to seek investments, to study abroad, to provide skills that will enable them to earn an income which they will send back to the country to their families as remittances. And so when you look at an ID document, you're not looking at a useless document that people must carry just for fun. It enables an old person to access pension. A mother, an indigent mother, to access child support grants, and does a whole lot of economic transactions that at face value you don't, or that we have been taught not to associate the ID card with. But the second pillar is security. Because in very many ways, the Department of Home Affairs is so central to South Africa's security. We undermine it at our own risk. For a period of 1 month during the festive season, about 5.3 million people transit through our ports of entry. And not at one stage was the country insecure during that festive season. Means that our immigration officers did their job. A South African carrying a South African passport abroad is safe, in the sense that the South African passport is regarded as one of the most secure documents you can have. You can travel anywhere easily. In asking foreign nationals to produce documents when they enter South Africa, we ensure that the country is safe by knowing who is coming in and out. In managing migration, in ensuring that South Africans themselves have ID documents, we ensure that they are safe and that the visitors to our country too are safe. The third pillar is governance and administration. Because the services that we render enable other government departments to discharge their own mandate. In knowing how many children are born in the country each year, and awarding those children their birth certificates, we enable the Department of Basic Education to plan for early childhood development in the next 2 years. To know how many children will be ready for grade 1 in the next 7 years, to know how many children will be doing grade 12 and how many children in about 19 years' time will be ready to start university. And therefore you can begin to plan in terms of the trends of passing over the years, whether in the next 19 years you will have sufficient universities, community colleges, vocational TVET to accommodate all these young people that will be coming out of grade 12. Working with SSA in providing them travel seekers per annum and during the peak season, we enable SSA and the tourism sector to calculate how many tourists arrived in the country, what was the income generated, and what projections, what contribution would that make to the economy as a whole. And in providing the services we provide to the insurance and financial services sectors, we enable them to combat identity fraud, which helps to save most required money that sustains a very critical economic sector in the country and save people's pensions, lifelong pensions and insurances. If the Department of Home Affairs were to succeed to register within 3 months without fail the birth of every child born in the country within 30 days, the impact that would have on the Department of Basic Education, Health and Social Development would be enormous. But using the platform of the Smart ID card, you already can accommodate your driver's license, your gun license, your social security card. You can provide an e-wallet or e-pass, which would make it completely unnecessary for South Africans to have to carry so many other documents, because at the end of the day, what drives is me and not my license, not my driver's license, not the card, the physical card called my driver's license. In the future to come, what traffic officers ought to have are fingerprint reading machines that at the placement of my fingerprint can tell the traffic officer in front of me whether I have a driver's license or I don't. Not a physical leaky card laminated that is called the driver's license. So the Department of Home Affairs is well aware of not only where we are, but where we want to be. And the fourth pillar, obviously, is service delivery, because ultimately, the ID card, the birth, marriages and death certificates, the passport, the visas, are all part of services that are rendered by government. And in actual fact, one of the things we've been saying to fellow government departments is that they are not using us as much as we believe they could. So that, for example, the Department of Human Settlements shouldn't be saddled with the question whether the people who are provided human settlements are South African or not. In partnership with the Department of Home Affairs, we should enable them access to the NPR in exactly the same manner that we have provided access to the banking, financial and insurance industry. These government departments could be able to ascertain whether the person who is provided a house or who is occupying that particular house is South African, deserves to be in that house, and whether they do not already have a house in another province as now beginning to introduce. They speak not only to how government and society as a whole views us, they also speak to how we view ourselves. Because a department which thinks of itself that its job is low level will reflect in the quality of the service it renders, in the quality of the personnel it recruits, and the lack of professionalism. But this direction that we are taking, that we've begun introducing in the department, is central to these five pillars that we have introduced. Because you cannot drive your modernization program if you continue to recruit people who are unprofessional, who are unskilled, who are threatened by the introduction of new technology and new methods of work. One of the critical things at Home Affairs is that we need to professionalize the department so that our people can enjoy the full benefit of quality service, so that even if we do not have the most beautiful offices, but at least our clients can walk away remembering the quality of the service rather than the aesthetic beauty of the office. Because the reverse of that would be tragic. If people walk out saying, "What beautiful offices Home Affairs has, but what pathetic service they have." So, this is the direction towards which we are driving ourselves. And in the time to come, we would like to see a situation where if a person has to renew their ID card, the smart ID card, or renew their passport, they will no longer need to come to a Home Affairs office to apply for a renewal. Because once we've captured your information on the department's database at a secure platform, you must be able to reapply at a kiosk somewhere. You must be able to reapply for the reissue of your smart ID card or for your passport without having to go to a Home Affairs office standing in a queue to do such a basic thing, which could in actual fact take less than 5 minutes to complete. That's all the level of work that we are doing behind closed doors. So that as we move on, we begin to introduce this innovation and enable the people of our country to benefit from the full gamut of innovation and technology that the modernization program has to offer. Obviously, the question of how then does all of this get funded is an issue that in the business case we will be presenting to cabinet later in the year, we are going to address those issues. And there is a number of ways which we believe could alleviate the funding pressures on Home Affairs and the pressure on National Treasury to provide Home Affairs with funds and to avoid maybe miscommunication. I will not cite some of them, but we are looking at a number of options, and we believe that it will be possible to find additional ways to fund the Department of Home Affairs without increasing any strain on the fiscus. To start with the premium visa centers. We have in our plans 2 earmarked for this financial year. The Premier of the Western Cape has made a request for a premium visa center in Cape Town, and we have said we are open to discussions so that if activity is found. Because the establishment of a premium visa center doesn't require funding from the department. It doesn't add any cost on the CFO's mandate. We believe that if we could discuss with the government of the Western Cape, we could have an additional premium visa center here in Cape Town. Now, maybe I will end with the question from Honorable Shope, since she's just gone out. Honorable Raputi, the Home Affairs Department, in actual fact, is not Hollywood. We have the cabinet, the government target, the PSA target is for at least a 7% vacancy rate, and at Home Affairs it's less than 5%. And we intend to keep it at that level and continue to improve. So we are far outperforming the target at the PSA. There were two DDG posts that were vacant. One of them has been concluded, and the one that is still vacant is vacant because there is a pending case appeal by the DDG that was dismissed. And so we can't fill the post until that case has been finalized. There are very few chief director posts that are vacant. Most of our posts at SMS level are filled, and those that remain unfilled, as I say, are within the 7% range that has been imposed on us by the PSA, and as I say, we are far outperforming that even vacancy rate, because we have a less than 5% vacancy rate. We have heard stories of people who claim to be selling smart ID cards. We are yet to meet somebody who is reproducing our smart ID card. We have heard stories of people who can make human. We are yet to meet a human who has been generated at a laboratory. South African smart ID card is foolproof. You will not hack it. You will not reproduce it. You can take your chances, but we will catch you, because that cheap thing that you do at your corner there will not get you into the national population register. And we will catch it, because the smart ID card is going to have a massive impact on the South African technology industry. And perhaps the industry is unaware yet of the positive spin-offs of the smart ID card than they should. As I was saying, traffic officers will soon no longer need to stand and ask you to take out your driver's license from your bag. They will just simply come with a card reading machine. It doesn't have to be a big gadget. And ask you to place your fingerprint, read your fingerprint, and know whether you have a driver's license or not. And know whether you have traffic fines or not.
No.
Now, to do that, you need South African technology, IT, SMMEs, to already be talking to the Department of Trade and Industry about their Black Industrialist Program to try and develop these gadgets that are going to assist us to be able to read all of these details. But the smart ID card can do so many other things. And we ourselves, that's the reason why we ask somebody, when they've applied for a smart ID card, to present themselves at Home Affairs to connect and enable their smart ID card, because we want to be able, this card, once you have, it's not only the process of applying for it that is smart. The card itself is smart. It's not only the process that is live, the card itself goes live the day you come to collect it. Wherever you travel with it, whenever you transact with it, we are able to record that this is where this card is being used for the following purpose. And that's why we don't want Malusi to come collect Apleni's card as proxy, because Apleni must enable it with his own fingerprint so that it goes live. The banks are now able, working with us. So you can bring your cheap modified genetic lookalike. I'm trying to think of these animals that have been made in laboratory. Clone there. You can come with your leaky clone there. The bench will tell you that this thing is a clone. No, it doesn't exist. Because when they connect with Home Affairs, they'll be able to establish that cue. There are very few countries which have succeeded to implement smart ID card projects. Some of them that belong in the G8 failed dismally on the very first day of of rolling out the card. The PMA, the Border Management Agency, is going to help us solve many problems that we face. One of those is just the management of our borderline, land, maritime, and air. But the PMA is not established yet. That's why you only have five people. The five people who are there at the present moment are managing the process, because you can't manage that PMA. There's nobody here whose core function it is to establish it. So the five that are there are managing the process. Then once the legislation is passed, what they had to do, they are called the PMA Mod Project Office. So they are not the PMA itself. Nobody is employed by PMA for PMA. We just have a project office. They've developed a business case. They've conducted the feasibility studies. They've done the environmental impact assessment, the socio-economic impact assessment. They are leading the legislative process. Once they've completed that business, and we now begin the process of establishing the DMA, whether they will join it or not will be determined at that stage. But for now, they are a project office. So that's why they are five, because you also don't want to establish an unwieldy structure for a project that's not yet established. At NEDLEC, at the present moment, we went to discuss the legislation with them, to consult with them, because we are required to do so, to consult on the legislation before we bring it to Parliament. And there were five issues that were raised as concerns by both business and labor. One of those was what labor calls agentification of government. Because they were suggesting that instead of creating an agency, we must establish a department within Home Affairs. The second was about the powers of the minister to set minimum standards. The third was about dispute resolution. Fourth was about the right to strike by the workers, by members of the DMA, and the fifth one was about confidentiality, the confidentiality clause. We have resolved, we believe we've resolved all of them, but there's only one discussion we have to have with labor around their concerns about aging, because we've made it clear that you can't establish an additional department. You can never have a department within another. The the border management agency would operate along the same principles as the National Defense Force and the Fed. You have a Department of Police, and Fed are an agency within the department. You have the Department of Defense and Military Veterans, and the National Defense Force is an agency within. And the border management agency will be like that, an agency within the Department of Home Affairs. So we are to finalize that discussion, and then we believe that we've really covered a lot of ground to accommodate those concerns around those issues. The other concern which has been raised, and we dealt with it very quickly, was the moving of customs functions into DMA, and we indicated that it's not everything that has to do with customs that will be taken over by the DMA. It is only those functions that relate to the passage of goods through our ports of entry. So that has been resolved, and we all understand one another. And therefore, we believe that we will be ready on the 1st of April to start the process of establishing it, providing we meet the timeline of finalizing the legislation during this financial year. With regard to the network, as I indicated at the previous meeting, we went to cabinet and requested exemption from the requirement to transact for our IT through CETA, which was approved. But cabinet said, even as it approved, it still required us to talk to CETA about the modalities of this and to still find out whether there was no other way that CETA could assist, could still be able to provide this service to us. We made it to be very clearly understood. There was a nice advert by FNP which showed a Home Affairs office and an FNP, and there were no queues at Home Affairs and there were queues at FNP, and they said this never, and it was a nice and free advert, because yes, truly it will never happen. A department that provides service, unlike a bank provides a service to its client, Home Affairs provides a service to everyone, to all South Africans and non-South Africans, those that have documents and those that don't have documents. Because the people at Lindela who have entered South Africa without documents are our clients too. We must provide a service to them by sending them to Lindela, by providing them a meal while they are there, by working with their embassies in South Africa and deporting them back to their countries, repatriating them. So yes, you never have Home Affairs without clients. By nature of the department and the scope of service it must provide. So, the risk of a Home Affairs office without a network, is that it puts at risk. One, it delays and causes enormous anger amongst our clients, and that's our top priority. But secondly, it exposes our officials to unfair criticism, because when the systems are offline, there is nothing you can do, you must sit. And when members of the public see you sitting, they think you are not working, and they shout at you. We have done a lot around last year to talk to our managers at all our offices and advise them that when systems go offline, please immediately interact with members of the public in the office. in some of the offices, we would find out that the security guard at the door would be telling people that without any reason, the office is closed now, go back home, come back tomorrow or any other day. And we were saying, it's not the duty of the security guard to do that. They're not employed to do that. Their job is to protect our clients and our officials and our property. Not to communicate with clients. They only communicate with clients to let them in, to tell them which queue to go to, and even then, that if an office doesn't have a floor manager. So, the frequency of the network going offline has really damaged our reputation and caused our clients a lot of anger. That's why at some point I took an extraordinary step of going out to actually mention what the problem was, because under normal circumstances one department would not name another department as the source of its problems. But when your service provider is inconsiderate and indifferent to the challenge you are facing and puts your own reputation at risk without taking any responsibility, they leave you no option. You must take measures to also defend your reputation and name the problem for what it is. And as I say, what I believe is that the decision, the most recent decision to declare Home Affairs as a member, a full member of the security cluster, will actually help us resolve all these problems. And so we're working towards getting the necessary resolutions which will enable us to transact for the network with those who have capacity to provide us with online 24/7 network, not only in the offices which are in urban areas, but who also have the network to reach out to rural areas. Because it doesn't help us to have live capture only in the city centers, but the people in rural areas still hear about the smart ID card but have no access to it. So we want a network broadband connectivity in the rural offices so that we can provide live capture even in those offices. But that's not the trend.
I'm sure that you are aware of the time. Remember the time that you said.
Thank you, Chair. Just that you asked a lot of questions. I thought we were going to contain the questions too. So, with regard to the network and cyber security, we are addressing those issues. We are a member of the cyber security team that is led by the Department of Police and in order to protect, because as you modernize Home Affairs services, you need to protect your cyber network. And so we are working hard in that regard too. We are succeeding to defeat fraud and corruption. I think when we talk about two reviews, I'm sure the DG would elaborate on that, but the department since July last year has caused the arrest of about 37 officials involved in fraud and corruption. The recent ones being the one who had sold over 300 birth certificates at about 2,000 rand each.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And a number of others. We are working both to combat and to prevent. And part of the prevention, besides the regular education and conscientization of the officials, included introducing the backup system, which enables an official to have access only to their computer, using their fingerprint, their identity, so that they can't access our network whilst at home, because in the past few years, just over 10 years ago, there were officials who could access the Home Affairs network long after they've been fired. So we have to put that thing to an end by introducing a much more secure system, which also cannot allow Manusi to access a plane's computer. Just near fun. Once a plane's computer once it's off his workstation for about 15 seconds, it switches off, and only he can switch it on and enable it. And if he's not there, if he's on leave and they need to use the site, they have to reset it for the person who must use it. But I can't just walk around using everybody's computer. And the Minister of Home Affairs has no access to the National Population Register because he doesn't need one. You know, no, I don't need to. I have a lot of officials, 9,902 of them, who can do that thing for me. I don't need myself to have access to the NPR. And so the fight against corruption in the department is succeeding. I think I've spoken about the budget. And that, yes, we are constrained. Yes, we understand the challenges faced at government. We are party to the collective decision about the fiscal consolidation. But at the same time, we are looking at measures to find other ways to fund the department. Finally, the other questions, the colleagues will respond to them. Finally, with regard to the critical skills recruitment, the department does not recruit because we don't know what critical skills are required by what company. The companies recruit the skills and they come to us for their registration. We only come in when a company says to us, please, we have recruited the following critical skills, register them, then that's when we come in. So then finally, with regard to the IEC, the decision is that you see you have a challenge. The Constitutional Court made a ruling that people who are registered to vote must provide sufficient particularity of themselves and their residence. But the Constitutional Court the Constitutional Court decision was not retrospective. It started at the time of the registration at Tlokwe and moved on. Just subsequent to that, a few days before the by-elections at Tlokwe, there was another court challenge at the Electoral Court, and the Electoral Court took a decision which now was retrospective, which then posed a challenge for the IEC because there is a Constitutional Court decision. The Constitutional Court decision is supreme. It's superior. But subsequent to a superior court taking a decision, a lower court takes a decision which now changes the decision of the Superior Court. So what the IEC said, they need to go to the Constitutional Court and seek clarity on which of these two must now be implemented. And we decided as different departments that we will join the IEC appeal because we too need that clarity. COPTA, Home Affairs, in particular in other government departments. So we are awaiting a decision in that regard. Meanwhile, there is a technical committee which has been established, led by COPTA, which is trying, including the South African Post Office, Home Affairs and other departments, SSA, which is trying to assist people with addresses because two-thirds of South Africans do not have addresses. So they are going to be disenfranchised by a genuinely intended decision. and it's no fault of their own that they have no addresses. So if you have to provide addresses on a retrospective basis, it means out of the 25 million people who have registered to vote and those additional who registered over the past weekend, you now are going to have over two-thirds of South Africans having to start afresh to register to vote, which basically will have an impact on the time frame for local government elections, which are stipulated and regulated in law. So that challenge needs to be resolved in a manner that addresses both concerns, that people must not vote where they don't reside, but at the same time, do not disenfranchise South Africans. They fought long and hard for this right. And if you ask me, I still believe they are prepared to fight long and hard for anybody who will try to take it away from them, whoever they are. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have anything to add, Gigi?
I think Minister has covered a lot of things, but I think the issue which I would deal with it is the one, so how do we deal with the issue of we've got leaking, but we're still saying we'll do more. Chair, modernization is the answer. Chair, to have people producing an IT document, if we can take those steps, we will need somebody to fill a form with a pen, we need somebody to take a fingerprint in the ink, we need someone to take that thing and courier it to head office, fill the form at head office, go to all those levels, so that we produce the IT manual, probably in the line with about, I think about 20 or 32 steps. But once we go to it, what do you need? It's just one person who is in the live capture, there's no paper, there's nothing, it just goes. So you won't be able, once you go to it. The big issue is when we're talking about the BMT, which is bad marriage and death. The problem with that thing is the paper process. It's not giving problems. But once we automate it, everything comes with foolproof and all that. I was dealing with another case this morning when I was already in the room, where somebody comes and says, no, my mother is a foreign national, but my father is here, but I want to register this child. What is the answer? Well, the mother is dead, you can't get it. Mm-hmm. DNA. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that DNA again. If you want to do it in a manner that you can control it, you can still get someone and the other and all that. So automation. So now when I go to the Department of Health, where that DNA is going to be happening, must be downloaded to Home Affairs. So those are the things we're saying, that once we do the issue of modernization, is what is going to help the Department of Home Affairs. Turnaround times is what we will do. I think Minister has dealt with the issue of prevention. So let's take this issue of people with the bell. You know, Home Affairs is the last department which takes your fingerprint before you go to the resting place. But the issue is, we take that fingerprint on the paper, by the time that you come and get the death certificate, that fingerprint is not verified at that point. That's why if you take the case of Zimbabwe, when that person was in Zimbabwe straight, the funeral parlor said, this person came with an identity document which the face was of the deceased, but the ID number and everything is for somebody else. And then that person was buried in Zimbabwe, not in South Africa, but with a South African ID document. Because now when you take that fingerprint, it was not at that point able to verify. That's why Sherry is saying, you automate Home Affairs, all your problems are gone. Chair, there is an issue the ministers talk about. If the bank cut, we are estimating, when we started the project, we are estimating 38 million people in that group which does not wear what it is. But now if I go with this pace of 2 million per annum, whereas there's a million 16-year-olds, then that's not going to help us. But how to help us is to make sure that every South African has got a smart card. So if you take that technology of what is it used by people to connect for decoder, so what is that in your house? What do they steal? They steal a TV, steal it, but they can't touch the decoder because it's useless. Once it is with somebody else, we cannot. So as Minister is saying, a smart card, you can go and make it nice and look like. But once I put your fingerprint, he's not going to read with that. So as we get more people, stealing a smart card is really going to be useless. But yeah, what I was talking about is to say if we can get that. Chair, I think we did explain that the resources which we have are going to be equal to the plan which we have, but not equal to the mandate of former president. I want it to be clear. I do not have resources which are equal to the mandate of former president. Not there. But the resources I have is equal to this, so that I don't come here and say, I will deliver A, B, C, D, tomorrow I come and say I don't have funds. Those funds have been counted properly. But Home Affairs, as our mandate, where I was even thinking that if you can just give me 1 billion, that's 1 billion, rent, and then you can see where Home Affairs will go. But yeah, I know one has that. But it's what you are saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to give me a billion, we will do it. Yes. Then I think, Chair, let's explain that no, the identity fraud was already increased. It is a 15 years if none can go through the court process. Oh, no. So let's explain that. Yes, 15 years. Yes. Uniform budget we have, Chair. It is there in the unit. We'll be buying that. Chair, this issue, you know, this morning, Minister, I was watching a very painful program 403, I said the general secretary of one of the student movements, saying they are taking a decision that they get some box because of drugs in the schools. And says, we've tried, we've seen this thing, and where it comes from, they says, no, you know where these things come from. But what we're saying is that, is what we're tightening. When we talk about those immigration regulations, I'm sure you still recall about them. One of the most important things with that was to say, go and apply in your country of origin. And what did you want there on that applying in person? It was the photo and the fingerprint. That is the answer. So that whatever you cross, I take your fingerprint from home, I take your fingerprint at the time you're crossing the border, I match the two. If they match, you are the same person. I go to a crime scene, whether it's a drug or whatever, police picks up the fingerprint. What do? We go and match and say, this is the one person. Whether you change your name or whatever, but now we know. People are changing their names, but there's one thing which you cannot change. It's your guardianship. So those are the things now which I'm going to be linking with all these problems of asylum seekers and all that. That's why now we're saying, once we have got a full biometric capture reactor port of entry, that thing must link with your NIS, which is the asylum seeker and immigration, must link with the NPR, must link with the movement control system. I'm sure now the committee is aware of the case which we have where somebody said, I'm traveling with a world passport. But that person didn't come to our country with a world passport. So those are the things we're saying, modernization is what will resolve all these issues which we're talking about. I think we've covered all that. Then CFO knows that the revenue which we collect is not part of this, but we remember it's for a specific
expenditure item against it, which will be given by myself.
Thanks, sir.
No, I think you've done well, and then in the meeting of Home Affairs, you'll never answer all the questions. You will only do well in answering them. Because for any answer that you give, there is a subsequent question that will follow to you. And then we can find ourselves the whole day here. But then, just for 3 seconds, to allow that Mpumulwan, he wanted to ask something. He looked like he was bending, but I conscientized him that we are in injury time.
Yes, yes, yes.
Thank you very much. The main program on the question of what address them to? Are they talking about the constitutional court to giving out postal addresses or address where you sleep at a particular time? Or because let's say for example my church, and then you also go to the rural area. There is no street address. It seems this thing is looking at from a different perspective. What I want to find out is that what exactly are you addressing and what are you appealing in? What do you want from the court? Are you saying that they must recognize the status quo as it is now? And so on. The second question was on the, it's just a follow-up question of what you were talking about, the foreigner recruiting and the business people. I know certain organizations, certain companies that are incorporating, particularly security companies, some of them from DRC. These are companies, and they recruit people from DRC to come to work. And this causes some kind of friction. I think when we went out, we discovered that the third and last question was on the question of in this agency, and in fact in Home Affairs, the vetting of people that are working in the Home Affairs, particularly in this agency, was a very sensitive thing. I hope that when you talk about migrating to this, we will probably solve that as well. Those are the three main things.
Okay,
some people
scores.
Thank you. Yes, people are vetted and currently and will be vetted for PMA. Mm-hmm. Two, critical skills are well regulated, and there is a list of critical skills which has been drawn together by DTI, Higher Education and Training, and Home Affairs. It's not us who determine it, because as I say, we are enablers and facilitators. We don't ourselves need a specialist doctor at Home Affairs or those critical skills, but the list has been gazetted, and every company must comply with the list that has been gazetted, and nothing outside that for critical skills. So, but it happens that companies have to recruit general work visas. Have to recruit people for general work visas, providing they have advertised the post in South Africa, exhausted all mechanisms, and couldn't find the relevant schemes in South Africa. Then they are exempted to bring those general skills from abroad. Thirdly, the Constitutional Court is looking. It doesn't say necessarily addresses. It says sufficient particularity. Basically, I think what we all presume it means is your physical address, because PO Box 1234 is not sufficient particularity. You can have it living in Eastern Cape. You can have it living in Limpopo. It doesn't tell us that you are living in Cape Town. So it means sufficient particularity with regard to your physical residence, so that a person from the Cape Metro doesn't get passed to go vote at Inanda. You must vote where you sleep, where you
live, where you pay your bonds, your rates, or if you don't pay any of those, you live in informal settlements where you live. And that's why we are saying the appeal one seeks to clarify the electoral court decision vis-a-vis the constitutional court. But secondly, we seek to ascertain that going forward, people will be provided with enough particularity for them to be able to register. In rural areas, people still use a bus stop, a school, a shop address, and a traditional leader's address or a church. And whether that is sufficient particularity, because that physical address explains where you live. You may not have a physical address for your home. It could happen that for these local elections, you will still not have that physical address. A physical address must never disenfranchise a person who constitutionally has the right to vote. So those tensions need to be resolved in a manner, though, that ensures that people cannot be passed across towns to go vote where they don't live. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much. I think, honorable members, if you thank the team led by the minister for having done their best, I think they have performed 10 out of 10. Today, we are very clear about the vision. They are clear in their minds what they want to do. Of course, the difficulty is in carrying out the plan. In relation to the capacity and the finances that they have. I think it's the only challenge, but they are very clear in their mind what is it that is good that South Africa must have, and what is it that we should do to service our people. I think we have had clarity on it. And of course, is that the confirmation that our smart ID card is secure. And then I think that should make us to be able to sleep. And thank you very much, Minister MCG. Honorable members, can we then go to the next item and then ensure that we actually dispense some of these things? So the next item is the one that deals with the Immigration Amendment Bill. Honorable members will remember that last week, I think we had a challenge, and then there were a couple of questions that were raised by our legal advisor, and then we mandated Home Affairs and our legal advisor to have an intervention on these particular issues and then seek clarity, and I'm happy to report that they did meet. And they made one hell of a progress on that, and we hope that we have reached finality on this particular immigration amendment bill. I would just like to ask Daksha just to be settled a little bit, then to be able to just give us the points, the 2 points that they've agreed on, so that then we are able to resolve on them. And actually, you can have the gadget for yourself as well, so that when you speak, you can hide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Good afternoon, members and officials from the department. You will recall that last week, the department and Parliament, if I can call myself Parliament, we disagreed on two issues, or we wanted to clarify two issues. The first was the sentence construction of the First Amendment, which was Clause 1A. We were of the opinion, or Parliament was of the opinion, that the sentence construction, as it was then, could be interpreted to mean that a person first had to contravene the act and had to have overstayed in terms of the way that sentence was written. But the true intention was to say that a foreigner who is illegal by virtue of overstaying will not qualify. We have made it for now rewritten that sentence. I'm not sure if everyone has a copy of the book.
Yeah,
okay. that we needed to settle was the fact that the clause did not include an internal recourse for persons who had valid reasons for overstaying but would still be facing the sanction. In discussions with the department, we have now included a clause 1B, which now allows that particular foreigner who has been disqualified from obtaining a visa for reasons of overstaying to make an application to the DG, and the DG then will be able to waive that disqualification where exceptional circumstances as prescribed will exist. Therefore, the amended document is now before you, which caters for those two issues that we did have last week.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think now is we all have something in front of us. The amendment on section 1, it now reads as follows: 1A. Foreigners who are illegal by virtue of having overstayed as prescribed do not qualify for a port of entry visa, a visa, admission into the Republic, or permanent residence permit during the prescribed period. Upon application, that's 1B, as prescribed from outside the Republic by the legal foreigner contemplated in subsection 1A, the Director General may waive the disqualification contemplated in subsection 1A where exceptional circumstances as prescribed exist. Now that is the section 1 of our amendment. And then section 2, and then this one then reads as follows: any foreigner who leaves the Republic after the expiry of his or her visa shall be dealt with in terms of section 32(1)(a). That is the change as well that has been brought in. This is now our new amendment to the Immigration Act. Is there anything that any member wants to add? And that is Bumrah.
Yeah, I have the determination. Usually, when you say a person receiving the sanction, usually you determine the case in mind. Is the person aware of it? Which goes to the question of the language that is written here, understand that language. Has it been made aware? But what you're saying is that the stamp that is in the passport has to stay for how long? And if he is aware, he automatically is overstayed. So is there no mechanism that can happen within the country? You know, because I think it would be more difficult for a person to just get up. And the law is clear. You will not get a visa coming in if you have today. There is no mechanism of checking. You say making an appeal perhaps outside the country. There is no mechanism that you can do that perhaps the DG can be given a chance to look into the matter while the person is being still inside instead of you tied with the question that the person must have to get out to check the guilty mind before you have sanction, which is very drastic sanction can be implemented.
Okay. I think let's try and address what Captain Bumrah is raising. The thing is that when a person is inside the country, you can't trace the person where the person is. They get at Oar Tambo, it's a visitor, then goes to Durban, goes to Kruger Park, you'll never know where the person is. And you'll only realize that this person is overstayed when the person gets to a port of exit. And when he now submits the passport to go, that is the only time that you see now that this person
but then you can't stop the person. The person goes, but then he's disqualified now to come back because of the overlay in terms of the regulation. But then when he's outside, if he's not happy about being disqualified now to come back over a particular period of time, blah, 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 then he can actually make a representation. But if the person is inside, there is another provision in the existing act where the person can approach Home Affairs and can do all other things. But here we are actually accommodating those that they are on their way out. Now it's going home. And then that person, then if it's overstayed, then will now be disqualified to come back in terms of the regulation. But if it's disgruntled, then this 1B now provide for that person to be able to make representation to the department, you know, it's for some sort of relief. I think that is that's the situation which we have actually dealt with over the many days that have gone past. And method.
Thank you, Chair. Just want to get a clarity. We are not because I was listening to the attorney in her presentation, we are not declaring them undesirable anymore. That's one. Secondly, Chair, I don't want to find myself by being part and parcel of chasing away our African brothers. I just want to make this clear. As the FF, we can't be part and parcel of that one. What are we trying to achieve by amending this bill? And then I take the second part, which is the intervention by the Director General. And then my question will be, after how long the DG will intervene? Because here we've been told that the department alone have some challenges or network problem. What if a person was trying to reapply for the visa inside the country and went to our offices and the network is a problem? And I don't know, Chen, I just want to get those clarities and just to make it very clear that, but if we try to pass such bills and act and laws in the country, we must bear in mind that it will be always the case that people will move from point A to point B. We must not criminalize the movement of people. We must not be seen as enemies, especially of our African brothers. What are we trying to achieve? I'm happy that the DG is here.
Okay. I thought that this kind of questions we really tried to deal with in the many meetings that have gone past, and we had sufficient clarity.
But Chair, I must not be intimidated.
No.
I don't know why the honorable members is talking while you are talking, because it's my right to talk here. I don't want to be part and parcel of things that is going to be. Please.
Okay. She has the right to speak, and then that's why we need to actually also try and make it clear. That's why I was just raising that we had a sufficient discussion for this, and many times it was made clear. But I think even at the moment we can provide an opportunity for more clarity. But you'll remember that we had a section under Section 3 which was receiving different interpretation by our customers out there together with their lawyers. And then they were actually interpreting it to mean that a person that is overstayed, they think is a person that is overstayed more than once. That means there must be an overstay first, and then there is nothing that happens. Only when the person now has overstayed more than once, is then that is the regulations will kick in. And which was not the intention of the department. That was terrifying. It was not the intention of the department. The department wanted to deal with any person that overstayed, even from the first instance. But then it was problematic outside. Then that is what it is now being clarified, to ensure that even those that are overstaying for the first time, there is clarity. But with this one, is a disqualification, not a declaration of undesirability.
Okay. I'm sure that I just need to check whether there are further input on that. Let's start with the DG. We can come and explain. Okay.
Okay, just on the point, exactly the point that you made. If it was the intention of the act that a person who overstays even on a single occasion, as you explained, that the intention was to mark them undesirable, then surely the act would have said any person who overstays their visa, full stop. There would have not been those words for the prescribed number of times. When I read that, for me, the intention means that the regulations would have provided what the prescribed number of times that the person who was supposed to overstay their visa. So, as a follow-up on that, the question I want to ask is, why do you have to amend the law if you can amend the regulations to make provision for that? And the regulations then said the prescribed number of times is low. That's the part I don't get, because when I read the act says prescribed number of times, and any person who's writing a piece of legislation, if their intention was you're not allowed to overstay, the act will say that. When you say prescribed number of times, the intention then means that you're going to prescribe the number of times. That's, to me, makes absolute sense.
Yeah, well, I'm sure maybe because the previous week you were not present when this was left. I think that is the challenge we have. That is a plan.
Well, thanks, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Members. So I think this thing must start by saying to visit any country is not a right, it's a privilege. Any country in the world. That's why countries have got what we call a visa. To say they allow me to go to their country. They've got a right not even to give me that visa. Second point, there are a number of days which we signed with the country A and the country B to say, if you come to this country, we can give you a visa waiver for 30 days or we'll give you a 90 days. And Jesus go further and split and say, if you are an official, you are a diplomatic, you are an ordinary citizen of that country, that's what you have. Therefore, it can't be correct to say people must come to our country when you have overstayed. You are starting out to be dealing with those people in a negative way. You are saying comply with the law of that country. Just imagine yourself going to UK, go to even these countries we're talking about, Botswana, close by here. And you go and you just stay without anything. It's not possible. So these things are put because it's an agreement first. That's why the chair explains that. But if I'm in this country, then I got sick. It's not within my any control. Why would I say go to your country and go and declare that desirable? No. That's why you follow a process and say, I'm extending this visa because of this reason. But you might have another circumstances. That's why I was saying, you can't deny anybody to go back to his or her country of origin. Because when you do that, who's going to provide shelter? Because if I'm in your airport, you are saying to me, no, I don't want you to leave. Go back and apply internally. The next question I'm going to ask, where I'm going to sleep, where I'm going to eat, and all those things, then I'm able to say, no, leave. Then you know, when you are in your country, then you will apply, and then we'll consider that thing of looking whether it was really an exceptional circumstances which can make you not to leave our country. But I think it is important to say, you can't argue on the basis that I've got a right to be in this country. We are not. But give me a privilege, just respect that privilege. And then I will even doing more further now to say, yes, I will look at your matter, and then based on that, if the circumstances, I will allow you.
are going to say, coming to our country, it must be clear, is a privilege. We'll never change it to a right. Then they say, can we deal with this thing of prescribed number of times?
That was
discussed.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that we have dealt with this thing the previous week, and then when we ended up now asking our legal office to really agree with the Home Affairs legal department on this specific thing, because we had almost everything here. And I thought that honorable members will be really waiting to hear whether we have agreed on those two things that we tried the officials to deal with. And today then they are coming back and saying, no, that thing has been dealt with. And I hope that it was not going to be a matter that takes too long today. And because this matter has been separated. That's why that particular clause has not been amended. That talks to the number of times. And then the whatever interpretation that it is there, it is now accepted to be correct. And then now to cater for the first time, that's why this amendment that we are having here, and it is not a declaration of antivirus. It's just simply disqualification for a particular time. But also what we argued the last week was that the department, you can't just disqualify people and then that's finished. And you just make a bureaucratic decision making, which is made by an official immigration officer at the port of exit. And then we need to provide for a recourse where a person that goes out and is disqualified, but feels that I did not just overstay willingly and arrogantly. I overstayed because of X, Y, Z, and whatever. Let's provide a mechanism for that person to get recourse. Now they agreed with the department, hence you have got now 1 year. So there is no real serious problem. We have agreed on that there is a recourse. And then in Section 30, also there is a recourse for that. And now we actually have now a better draft of our amendment bill, which I expected that members would be raising hands and say, no. The way now you have read it, we move for adoption. And I would like to put it to yourself is that if there is anybody who would like to move for the adoption of the amendment bill as it is now today, then to do so.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, as the ANC, we are putting control measures so that we must be safe, and even those people who are in our country must be known by Home Affairs. I move for adoption of this. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone who will support that?
I think it's
important. You support that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Any counter that you say?
Chair, I would appreciate if you allow me to extend until I get a mandate from our question.
We have not yet voted. Just a support now. I'm just asking for a count. Okay. Let's open.
There is no way that EFF can support this or across this amendment. EFF can't be part and parcel of the enemy of African brothers, because ANC wants to punish African brothers to come to South Africa. It must be recorded. EFF can't be part of the thing.
Okay. Okay. We may need to further clarify, but I don't think it is that necessary at the moment. Because really, to expect people to respect the laws of the country, I think it is just one simple thing that especially the very same African brothers that Lester is referring to. You can't just walk to their country. You'll remember that
on Thursday I'm going to Zambia. I don't need a visa. This is very progressive. You as South African, you want to be enemy, you must not include us as the SS.
Can I request that I not be interrupted? Because when you speak, then we do give you an opportunity to do so. I'm saying is that we have an experience just a couple of years back when certain members of the union that went to Zimbabwe, then they were turned around right at the entrance at Bay Bridge. Rejected, sent home straight away. And these are the things that are actually happening. But what we are saying is that in all the African countries, we do this, it depends on the bilateral agreements that are there. Any country that have got relaxed bilateral, just like any other country to us, then we don't need visas to them. But there are those that we need visas, especially even if they also need visas from our people. And then we reciprocate that. But at the end of the day is that every country has got its own laws that we must comply with. And if you don't, then you'll find yourself going through the gate that you have entered into.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. Earlier I raised my hand, and I just wanted to clear something that the picture that is being portrayed about us as ANC, that we are chasing away our brothers, our African brothers, it needs to be clear. We are the governing party. We are in government. We need to take those control measures so that we manage issues. And I think the reason why we discuss these amendments in the committee, whoever has a different view must come with an alternative and not blaming or passing remarks that are trying to dance other people. I'm just requesting that we must all understand our responsibility as members of the committee, that the committee must discuss and come with an alternative. But it's not the intention of the ANC or the government to chase away or hate on our black brothers or sisters. We need to have control measures. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And really that when we provide this piece of legislation, it is to facilitate movement of people and know when something happens, how do you deal with that. And if we believe that there is a weakness in the facilitation, then we must tighten it up to make sure that we are able to facilitate. And I think many.
Thank you. I think the committee has more than twice discussed this bill. And at the last meeting, there was one issue outstanding. And the issue was the interpretation of the first clause. And there was a difference between parliament, lawyers of parliament, and lawyers of the department. And we asked them to go and meet and try and harmonize their position. Now they have met and they have come with this product in which the department and parliament agree on the interpretation of clause one. So we are all at one. As mandated by the last meeting. That was the last meeting. So as a result, we do not have any problem with the product of what we agreed should be produced. And that is why the ANC will support clause one as amended.
All right, honorable members, then I just, because there is no counter except that
honourable members were saying is that they want us to record, but then can we then can I read the report that we would submit in the House for the introduction of this amendment bill? The report reads as follows: the report of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs on the introduction of the Immigration Amendment Bill, B 2015, dated 15 March 2016. The Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs resolved to initiate the Immigration Amendment Bill that seeks to amend the Immigration Act 2002. The purpose of the draft bill is to amend Section 32 of the Act as amended by Section 33 of Act 19 of 2004, so as to provide for an adequate sanction for foreign nationals who have overstayed in the Republic beyond the expiry date on their visa and to provide for matters connected therewith. The committee complied with the National Assembly Rule 238 sub 1 by tabling a memorandum in the National Assembly on 18 November 2015 in order to obtain permission to proceed with the legislative proposal. The committee was granted permission by the House to proceed with the legislative proposal to amend the Act. A prior notice of introduction of the bill, together with an explanatory summary of the draft bill as well as the draft bill, was published in the Government Gazette number 39501, dated 11 December 2015. The notice also contained an invitation to interested persons and institutions to submit written representation on the draft bill by 20 January 2016. The same invitation was also published in City Press and Maiden Guardian in English, Ipondo in Isikosa, and Free State News in Sesotho. The committee also consulted the joint checking mechanism in terms of NA Rule 239 sub 1B for advice on the classification of the draft. The committee received 12 submissions in total from the following institutions and individuals: the Forum for Immigration Practitioners South Africa, the Commission for Gender Equality, the Banking Association of Africa, AgriSA, Imminent Travel and Immigration, what is the HE now? HE Enables Engineering and Projects Property Limited, then Eben Spannenberg, Mongezi Bomela, SA Migration International, Edina Lidonde, Relocation Online, and the Law Society of South Africa. These submissions were considered and deliberated upon by the committee on 16 February 2016. The Department of Home Affairs responded to the submissions on the same date. After consideration of the submissions and the responses, it was agreed that the committee would further deliberate after members had consulted with their caucuses. Then the committee deliberated on the 1st of March and 15 March 2016. And of course is that the draft bill that is being adopted today. The committee, in accordance with National Assembly Rule 243, introduces the Immigration Amendment Bill, B 2015, in the National Assembly as a Section 75. And then there would be an amendment to this particular report just to include the comments that we have received from Honorable Hussein and Klobe. Can we then agree on that?
It's agreed. Chairperson. We must move for adoption of this or we must vote. Yes.
Then who seconded that? Mekenye? You seconded the report?
Yeah. So how do you know if I'm supporting? Because my hand was up before Mekenye.
Now I'm asking you,
Chair, my hand was up before, Mama Kenny. Maybe I was going to support that because Chair, now
no,
you don't want me to
support. It's
no, it's only, it must be noted that it's only ANC who is adopting this bill that is going to be enemy of the African brothers. It
okay.
must be on record, Chair.
I would always plead that when we have got a nice meeting starting in the morning, then we should not instigate certain things that will not make the meeting look nice. Okay, then it's agreed. Thank you very much. Can we then talk through the issue of the IEC? Honorable members, I think I've tried to communicate with the Secretary of the Committee to send you all documents that pertains to the report of the panel led by the Chief Justice on the IEC matter. No, you are released. Yes. Even though that you have got serious interest. But you are released, yes. Okay. And then I made sure that the Secretary sent all the documents to all committee members. And then also I think in the middle of last week, I tried to send the SMS to all members of the committee such that they should have discussions with their caucus and have positions on this specific vacancy. We have the report of the panel headed by the Chief Justice, which actually recommended 8 names to ourselves. Now, honorable members will remember when we were discussing this in the first instance, when we could not complete this particular work because of the number of people that were eligible for the first recommendation from the Chief Justice, and then when we had to actually send the report back to the House, that we are unable to actually fill because there was only one name that was qualified because of the constitutional provision, which is in the clause 193, sub 2, which is the one that actually was actually frustrating us that on appointment of the commissioners, then we must really make sure that the issue of gender and race, they are accommodated. And given the situation that we have all males currently in the commission, then we are now looking on the issues of gender as well as race. Then that is the problem that we are sitting with today. But I'm very happy that the names that are appearing now, at least we have got a couple of names that we can apply our minds on. And can I just simply just double check whether you all received the report as well as the CVs of the specific individuals that have been recommended? Is there anyone that has not received those documents? None. And then that means all of you have received, and then you have actually spoken to these reports, and probably you should be having a position on this. You've got something to raise.
Yeah, I do have a position. With your permission, I'd like to propose the name of Ms. Janet Yetalat.
If I give you an extra 1.5 minutes, can you tell us why you so?
I don't need as long as you offer me for a change. I normally will take quite the amount of time. But you recall when we discussed this matter previously, we made our position clear on Mrs. Janet Love, and more especially for the reasons you have advanced, to make sure that we meet the provisions of the Constitution, existing legislation, that we meet the principles of gender and race. proposed then that the standard law be accepted by the committee for recommendation to us.
Okay, now then,
Thank you, Chairperson. If you recall, on our last declaration on the very important issue, when Honorable Mwisen was there as well, we are advocating for the same candidate as Honorable Mwisen of the DA. So, because now she's coming back here, as shortlisted, you are still sticking with that name.
Do you mind just announcing the name? Because you have
Miss Janet Yetala.
Ah, okay. And then the ANC, Mekeny.
I think the
ANC
also support the name, I just the name of
Senator.
Thank you.
And then, do you have a reason yourself? Because others have explained.
Two reasons. As stated by what I would say, gender and also the race.
Okay. And then, Merakut?
Yeah, at the ANC, we looked at the issue of gender, we looked at the issue of skills and the expertise that the incumbent would be bringing. So we endorse. We are not just endorsing as the ANC, but we look at all those things, the capabilities and the experience that she would be able to execute as a high EC. Thank you.
Dr. Kumar, do you want to say something?
Well, just the further reasons, I think she will be having a more inclusive approach as the judge has observed, and then she has a sense of independence. And the judge said here, she demonstrated independence and a remarkable appreciation of the crucial role played by the Electoral Commission in protecting and strengthening our democracy. She has evidently thought through the challenges that are likely to confront the Electoral Commission and highlighted the important role that party liaison committees could play in addressing some of these challenges. So, an inclusive approach and a mediating approach to the role of IEC. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, and it is highly remarkable. Remarkable and appreciable. And unusually, that you can all compare on one name without having had a caucus before. And I think that I need to appreciate, and I would have hoped that from the immigration bill that you have come from, you would have acted like this. I think today I was going to sleep the nicest sleep. But in any way, that you have corrected yourself, that this time around, and then. So now, honorable members, let me just address you. Then we need to submit a report to the National Assembly. Then the report reads as follows. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs on the filling of a vacancy in the Electoral Commission, dated 15 March 2016. The Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, having considered a request to the National Assembly by the Chief Justice of the Republic of South Africa, Mr. Moeng, to nominate a suitable candidate to fill a vacancy in the Electoral Commission, report as follows. Following interviews by the panel established in terms of Section 6, Sub 3 of the Electoral Commission Act, 1996, the chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission and comprising the Chief Justice, the chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission, the chairperson of the Commission for Gender Equality, and the Public Protector. The Chief Justice submitted a list of candidates and their curricula vitae to the National Assembly for consideration to fill a vacancy in the Electoral Commission. The matter was referred to Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs on 2 March 2016 for consideration and report. You see announcement tablings and committee report number 19 of 2016 on page 2. The committee met on 15 March 2016 to consider the candidates recommended by the panel. Following its deliberations, the committee recommends that the House approve the nomination of Ms. Janet Love for appointment to fill the vacancy in the Electoral Commission of South Africa. Report to be considered by the House. That's the report that we are going to send in there. Anyone who moves for the adoption of this report, let's open.
Yes, Chair, but it must be added on the report that this candidate was rejected by the ANC on the last so there's no consistency.
Honorable Sauber, I thought you are moving for the adoption, but you said something else that is counter-revolutionary. Okay, let me hear what Dato Hussein.
Chair, I'm happy to move for adoption.
Dato Hussein, move for adoption. Who's
second team? The ANC second you is the adoption of the report, and we must also bring some anger management for the ESS that kind of people. Thank you.
No, thank you. That's after the meeting. Thank you very much, honorable members. The minister thinks you're also staying with us. Then that brings us to the end of this meeting. I really welcome you all. You know, your penalty waiting together and agree so easily. Thank you very much. The minister said again. I'm going to Then you will have all that you can speak as much as you like, they never take it.
No, it's okay.
Oh, you
leave.
Yeah,
you
need to.
No, you want to have a conversation.